Last time you don't did the test to see who was worthy of serving with him, of going to war with him, and he got his army together, and they did their three-pronged approach, and they were victorious. They were victorious. So, Perek Chet, Vayomer Elav Ish Ephraim. So the people of Ephraim said to him, Ma davar hazeh asita lanu? What did you do to us? The bilti korot lanu ki alakhu v'chem imidyan v'yivivun ito v'chazka. What did you do to us that you went to war and you didn't call us to fight with you against Midian? That's their complaint. And they fought with him vehemently. They were insulted, the tribe of Ephraim, that they had not been called to the war, and so they argued. Now, there's, you know, here you have Gidon, he's a leader. What could be his responses? What could possibly be Gidon's responses to that anger on the part of his constituents?
It's like, I'm the leader, so, I mean, you can't question really what...
He could say, I'm the leader, and you don't question me, and I made this decision based on what was good. What else could he do?
God told me to do this.
He could say, God told me to do this. What else could he do?
What makes you think you're so essential?
What? What makes you think you're so important? Essential to our fight. Those are all possible responses. None of them are the responses that Gidon had, however. And I guess we have a lot to learn from Gidon. Vayomer aleihem, and he said to them, Ma asiti ata kachem? He said, what? So Gidon said to them, look, what have I done compared to you? Halo tov ololot Ephraim b'tzor Aviezer. Are not the gleanings of Ephraim better than the vintage of Aviezer? In other words, are not the, again, it's an agricultural image, if you could imagine the ololot, those like small grapes that don't really ripen, that don't get big. He said, your tiny grapes are bigger than our best ones. Now, Gidon is from the tribe of Menashe, of the two children of Yaakov. Who's younger, Menashe or Ephraim?
Ephraim's younger.
Menashe's younger.
Oh,
Menashe's younger, but Ephraim's greater. So you're close. That's what I say to my sister all the time. You're older, but I'm smarter. Right? Just joking.
So she's smarter?
I wouldn't say that. I think we're both smart. The kids are. So, in other words, what's Gidon's response? Your little, your, like, what did I do compared to you? Your gleanings, your small grapes are bigger than our big grapes. What would you say to his responses? How do you summarize that?
It's like giving them a compliment.
He's giving them a compliment rather than everything that you said, which was very confrontational. You know, everything you said was like, I'm right, I'm the leader, I'm better, you know, God told me, blah, blah. Gidon says, that's not what he's doing. That's our natural response. Our natural response is to say, like, give me a break. Who do you think you are? Gidon's response is, you know what, you did so much more than I did. And he goes on to tell them, V'yedchem natan alokim et sari midyan, et ori ve'et ze'ev, u'ma yachoti asot kachem. So he said, you know, God gave into your hands the leaders of Midian and Oreb and Zev, who's in the course of the Tehillim we say in the morning. And so what could I do as good as what you did? Az rafta rucha me'alab b'dabro ha'davar hazeh. And so they were appeased by this, their indignation abated when he made this statement. Which, you know, I guess gives us some idea of what they were thinking. What were they thinking when they yelled at him? What, you don't think we're good enough? No, you're better than us. Now again, leadership, and in general, not just leadership, but getting along with people, oftentimes requires us to just, you know, appease the other guy. you don't always win the most by winning the war, by winning the battle, you know? Some, you think by winning the battle you win. You know, a lot of people make that mistake. So it's true in relationships, like marriage. You know, lots of people like to win the battles, but they lose the war because, you know, you can win the fight. You can win the immediate fight, but you lose your friend in the process of winning all those little fights. Or leadership also. You know, you can confront the people and say, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. Or you could just say, you know what, you also have a point. You also have a point. You have a point. Your point's better than mine. Because, you know, all that winning stuff is about our ego. But if you want to lead or you want to have a relationship, sometimes you have to put your ego away and just let it be. Just let the other guy feel good. Now, Gideon arrived at the Jordan River. He and his 300 men, they arrived there tired, yet pursuing. They kept moving. So he asked the people who lived in Sukkot, it's a Jewish town, he asked them to give bread to the soldiers because we're tired. And we're still chasing after Zevach v'Tzamuna, Malchei Midian, the kings of Midian. So he's asking them not to fight, but he's asking them for food, for support. Here's their response. Vayomer Sarei Sukkot, Hakav Zevach v'Tzamuna Atza B'yadcha, Ki Nitan Letzivach Alechem. He said, what? They said, the leaders of Sukkot said, is the palm of Zevach and Tzamuna in your hands that you want us to give you bread? Meaning, what's their fear? That they're being taken advantage of? I don't think that's their fear. What's their fear? Have you yet captured the kings that you ask us for bread? What's their fear? An army needs bread. You can't say slacking off. An army crawls, you know, on its belly, you know. If you don't have food, you can't fight the war.
Right.
So what are they complaining about, these people?
It might be a waste.
A waste? Because what, the soldiers will die in war?
Maybe. They don't have faith in the army.
Well, certainly it's a statement that they don't have faith in the army. So why should we help you? Because if you lose the war, Midian will be angry at us. So instead of siding with their fellow Jews, they hedge their bets, you know, as best they can and say, look, you know what, when you win, come back. But we're not going to help you because if you don't win, wow, Midian will punish us. Now, that is probably cowardice of the highest degree.
Right.
Do you understand? Like, okay, nobody's asking you to go to war, but how about at least supporting the war effort? You know, how about, like, not hiding, you know, waiting to see what happens. Like, we're going to defend you, but you don't really care about us. That's really cowardice. But Yomer Gideon, so Gideon answered them. Lachain b'tein Hashem et zevach etzamuna biyadi. So Gideon said, when God gives zevach and tzamun to the captains of the generals of the army of Midian, when God gives them in my hands, the dashti et b'tzorchem et kotzei amidbar ve'edbar kanim, I will thrash your flesh with desert thorns and briars. You know, I'm going to come after you. You know, I'm going to come after you. Now, this is like a big contrast to Gideon's ability to appease. What's the difference?
When they were disappointed, like, in not being involved, now they're not being involved, they're starving his soldiers.
It was a matter of his ego, and you know, like, he could put his ego aside because, look, the people were disappointed that they weren't involved. Here, however, the people should be grateful that other people are fighting the war for them, and they should give bread, and they're not. They're not at one with the army, with the people that are fighting on their behalf. So Kina says that's not acceptable. That is not acceptable. But Yal Misham Pinuah Vayidaber Aleim Kazot Vayanu Oto Anshe Pinuah Kasher Anu Anshe Sukkot. So he went to a different town. He went to the town of Betuel, the Pinuah rather. And he asked them the same thing, and they answered the same way. But Yomer God Lanshi Penuel. And so he also said to the people of Penuel, he said, when I come back in peace, I'm breaking down the tower of your town. Again, these are Jewish towns. But why is it important that Gidon makes these statements?
Usually you don't mess with the army.
You don't mess with the army. Okay, I have a bit of a stronger statement. Yes.
To show them that by not giving bread, it's not that they're not picking sides, it's that they're Dafka picking the enemy side.
They're picking the enemy side, it's yes, that's true.
Like,
what?
It's like a form of treason.
It's treason! Your army is fighting, right? And you are not interested in helping at all. Right? I'll give you an example. It used to be in this country that when there was a war, maybe it still is a law, I don't really know, it could be still a law, the army can commandeer your car and take it into battle. Right? We used to have a van, so, you know, the vans were very useful for the army. So the army can commandeer your van to take it into the battlefront. And you don't have a choice. That's, you know, our van used to be registered with the army. God forbid the army would need it. They would take our car and that would be the end of it. That's it. You can't say no. I'm not going to battle and I'm not giving my car. I'm going to hide my car. I don't know where my car is. That's treason. Right? And so it's important that Gidon make a statement. Important that he make a statement. You know, all right, you're not fighting in the battle, but you're still part. You're one of us. Kol Yisrael arevim ze bazeh. All Jews are responsible one for the next. And this is your responsibility. Give us bread. And if you're not going to give us bread, why should you enjoy the victory? But there has to be a punishment. V'zevach v'tzamuna. Now, you know, I just want you to know that Zevach and Tzamuna are two of the people that we mentioned in our morning Tehillim, and we mentioned them in our morning Tehillim based on this battle, right? So God, we say, "Say them kemidya and kezevach kisisra, say them kisisra kezevach v'tzamuna." So Sisra was the battle with Devorah that you learned about when I was away, and Zevach and Tzamuna are right here. So Zevach and Tzamuna Bakurkar, they are a place called Karkor. Bamachaneim ve'imam b'chameshet elef asar elef. They have 15,000 soldiers. Kol anotarim mina machanim b'nei keder. All that were left of the people of the east. Vanoflim be'ah v'esrim. Now, 120,000 of their people had fallen. Isholeif chera, people that bore the sword. They only have 15,000 left against the 300 of Gidon. Vayal Gidon derech hashchuni ba'olim. Okay, tells us how he enters. He enters by way of the tent dwellers, east of Nobah and Yogbaha. He smites the camp. The camp was secure. Pasuk Yud Bet. Ve'yanusu Zevach v'Tzamuna. And these two generals, Zevach v'Tzamuna, fled. Ve'yirdu v'achareyim ve'yilkot shnei machim Yidyon. And they pursued after them. They were captured, these two kings of Midyan. And Zevach v'Tzamuna v'kol ha'machaneh charid, and all of the camp was terrified. V'yashav Gidon ben Yoash min ha'milchama milamala hecharas, and Gidon the son of Yoash returned from the battle while the sun was still high. V'yilkad na'ar me'anshei Sukkot, and he seized a youth from among the people of Sukkot. Sukkot was the first town that said no to the bread. V'yichtov elav et sarei Sukkot. And he wrote for him the names of the 70 elders of the town and the leaders of the town. I guess altogether it was 77 men. But Yavo al Anshe Sukkot, and he came to the men of Sukkot, but Yomer, the boy write it down. Tell me who the leaders are. But Yomer Hinez El Zamuna. And so now Gidon goes and he says, here, I've captured Zevach and Tzamuna, the generals of Midyan. Asher cheiravtem oti lemor, that you scorned me when you said, Hakav Zevach Tzamun Etzah B'yadcha, that you, what, have you yet captured Zevach Tzamun? You scorned me. Ki Yitan Lan Hashecha Yifim Lachem, that you would not give my men bread. You refused that. And so he took desert thorns and thyrs and briars, and he beat them with it. With, he beat the elders with that, with their punishment. And the tower of Penuel, he broke down, and it killed people in the city. I guess it fell on them. So I guess when he went to attack the Migdal, the tower, there were those who fought against him. So he killed them. But you know, if we don't have, you know, if we allow treason, that's chaos. It's chaos. You can't have a society where people turn against you. You have to defend your own people. So Zevach HaTzamuna said, where are those people that you killed in Tabor? Their appearance is like yours. Now it turns out that Gidon had brothers who looked like him. Zevach and Tzamuna killed them. So, right? So he says to Zevach and Tzamuna, where are those men? They said, oh, they look like you, they answered. Ketorah b'nei HaMelech, they look like the form of the king's son. They look like your children. V'yomer Achai b'nei Imihim. And he answered them. He said, they're my brothers. They're sons of my mother. Chai Hashem lu hechayatim atem. Like, if only you had let them live, lo haratichem, I wouldn't kill you. So they evidently killed them, his brothers, because they thought they were his sons. They said, oh, they look like you. He said, well, if you had to kill them, I would have to kill you. Which I'm not sure that's true, but he did say that. So now he said to his oldest son Yeter, get up and kill them. And the boy, his son, did not pull out his sword because he was still a boy and he was afraid. So Zevach and Tzamuna said to Gidon, you kill us. Gidon, you get up and kill us. Because a man is like his strength. Like you're a man and you'll be strong. This young boy, he can't. Look, even if the boy Yeter would then get up the courage to kill them, maybe his thrust of a sword would not be 100%, and then they'd be in pain instead of like a swift death. There's no mitzvah to torture your enemy. So vayakam Gidon vayarog et Zevach Tzamuna. So Gidon got up, he killed Zevach and Tzamuna, he kachet hasharonim. He took the crescents that were on the necks of their caps. That's like the crescents, like the royal crescents. So now the people of Israel come to Gidon. They're very excited. And they say to him, Mishol banu gamata gambincha gamben bincha keoshotane miyad midyan. They said, rule over us, also you, also your son, also your grandson, because you have saved us from Midian. What do they want from, what do the people of Israel want from Gidon? What?
Kingship.
They want him to be a king. Now, until now, what is the methodology of leadership in the Jewish people? There's a Navi, and there's a Shofet. And what else?
Hashem.
Okay, Hashem is the king. The Navi, the prophet, brings down the word of the king, tells you what the king wants of you. And the Shofet makes sure that it's enforced. Okay? The people want a king. Now this, by the way, this desire for a king is a natural desire. It's a natural desire, but why is it natural, and second of all, why is it a mistake?
Because people need to see something.
People need to see something, right? People want to know who I can turn to. You know, if I have a problem, if I have an injustice, if I'm afraid of an attack, who do I go to? People want a fleshly king so that, because they could see him, they could understand him. Okay. What's the mistake in that? First of all, it's a deficiency of emuna. And second of all, God said you can have it when time comes. But not yet. For I'm your king now. Right? And you have to be very sure that I'm your king. So this request on the part of the people is it's an old age. It's not something new. It's not a new desire. It's something that's been festering for a while now. You know, we had Moshe. We had Yeshua. Now we want you. You know, we want to know there's one person to turn to. Even though the time is not yet. God said, you're going to have a king, but not yet. And this fracture in their emunah is something that doesn't really repair completely until Shaul becomes king. Vayomer lehem Gidon, and Gidon said to them, Lo emshal ani bachem, velo yimshal bini bachem, Hashem yimshal bachem. So Gideon answered and said, I will not rule you, nor will my sons rule you. God rules over you. Vayomer aleihem Gideon eshalamikem she'ela. And Gideon said to them, let me ask you a question. Utnuli ish nezem shlalo. And each man should give me the nose ring from his body. Because they used to have, they used to wear nose rings, golden nose rings, because they were Yishma'elim. Now, I can't be referring to the Jewish people, because Jewish people are not Yishma'elim. The Midianites were related to the Yishma'elim. Maybe this was a start. I don't know why it says Kiyem Yishma'elim. Let's see if I have it on my notes someplace. I don't think so. Do you have a Rashi? Okay, let's see if we can. It probably isn't there. It's probably downstairs, actually.
We have a little mark at the bottom of ours, at least.
Yeah, I see the note at the bottom, but it doesn't really help me, because this here says that it was the Midianites he asked for the gold. But it sounds to me like he's asking of the men of Israel. For the dialogue, it sounds like he's asking the men of Israel, even though the note does say that, you know, that the Mishmaelites. Okay, I'm going to go on. Vayomro natoni tanvi for short tasimla. And they said, okay, we'll give it to you. And they spread out a garment on the floor, and every man threw a nose ring from his body. What does this remind you of a little bit?
The golden calf.
And it should remind you of the golden calf, because, thank you, because exactly what happened to the golden calf is going to happen here. That is to say, take a guess.
The women won't give.
No, we don't have women here. What's going to what happened in the golden calf?
They turned away from Hashem.
They turned away from Hashem. Right, that's exactly what's going to happen here. What pasuk are we? Kaf. Dollars. There's Mr. Vasil says it's just they used to wear them. David says what the footnote in our book says, but I still don't. It must be, you know what it must be? It must be, because everybody seems to say the Midianim were Yishmaelim. It must be that these nose rings were captured in the war. It must be that these nose rings were captured in the war. That was part of the booty that they took from the Midianim, who were in fact brothers of related to the Yishmaelim. That's what it must be. So they took these nose rings and they threw it on the they spread out a garment, they put it on the garment, and the weight of the nose rings was 1,700 gold dinar, which is quite a lot, not including all the crescents and pendants that they had captured that they also threw in, and the purple garments and the chains for the necks of the camels, which gives you an idea of, you know, how the Midianim dressed their camels. Now, Pasuk of Zion. Vayas oto Gidon le'efel. Now Gidon took those nizamim, those nose rings and those crescents, and he made it into an ephod. Now, an ephod is a garment. So it was a golden garment, so obviously nothing to wear. And he had intended it to be a remembrance, a memorial, like a statue of some kind. But Vayatzeg oto be'iro, he set it up in his city. Vayizru kol Yisrael acharav, and all of the children of Israel strayed after it. Vayizru is like, again, for the word zonah, is a prostitute. They were disloyal to God. They prostituted themselves to this ephod. It became a avodah zarah. Yes.
I mean, isn't that obvious? I mean, the people were looking for an intermediary.
Yes.
Why would he do such a thing?
I'm dumb. Why did he do such a thing?
Poor judgment on his part.
It is poor judgment on his part, yes. And the puzzle goes on to tell us, Vayhi l'Gidon l'Veito Mokesh, and it became a snare for Gidon and his family, meaning it became for him, you know, a sin. It was a sin, and it was counted against him and his family that he did such a thing. Now, he had meant it to be a source of avodah zarah, but by making it into an ephod. Now, the ephod that the Kohen Kagadol wore, what was the ephod that the Kohen Kagadol wore?
Breastplate.
It was the breastplate. What was it used for?
Talking to God,
asking requests. Should I go to war? Should I not go to war? Who should go first to war? Asking. So he had intended it to be an ephod, like something that they could ask Hashem. Again, very much like the golden calf. Golden calf wasn't supposed to be a avodah zarah. It was supposed to represent God. But you can't make a representation of God. Right? So he wanted it for people to be able to look at the ephod and see Hashem. But he wasn't told to do that, of course. And they went beyond the mandate, his mandate. And in fact, it became a very big transgression. Eventually, it became a avodah zarah. And it's counted against Gidon.
Was it an ephod that people could actually communicate with Hashem through? Or was it just a pretty statue?
I mean, did it work? I don't know. I don't think so. But, you know, when you think something works,
then it
has a power.
Placebo.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's a placebo effect, yes. I imagine that's how avodah zarah works. I mean, people aren't stupid. Mm-hmm. You keep going to your idol and davening to your idol, you know, you're not stupid. So there must have been some effect, some placebo effect, some belief. You know? Because also, when you're very invested in something you believe in, so, you know, you could convince yourself it's working. And Midian was subdued before the children of Israel, and they no longer continued to raise their head, and the land was tranquil for 40 years. For 40 years, the land is quiet. Now, you know, I always like to kind of, you know, when you're reading Shoftim, it's a fairly depressing book. Because you see all the mistakes and all the wanderings and of the Jewish people, and it gets worse and worse as we go along. We're only up to chapter 8. Wait until we get to the end of the book. But then you had this one sentence, and it was quiet for 40 years. When it says it was quiet for 40 years, that means there were no enemies. basically the Jewish people were doing the right thing, and therefore God did not send enemies. 40 years is a long time. 40 years. I'm trying to. This is now 2010. Yeah. 1970. You weren't even born in 1970. You know, I was just beginning my adulthood in 1970. 40 years of quiet. You know what? It's a long time. It's a very, very long time. I think to myself, look, since 1945, since the end of the Holocaust, 1945, the land has been quiet for so long. You know, yes, we've had wars of terror, we've had wars in the land of Israel, but basically, we're living a very good life. Even with our wars and with our terror, we're really living a time of chesed. It won't last forever. There are ups and downs in the world, and this too will end. I hate to say that, but it will. But it's a long time. It's a long time. Yes.
It's interesting because I remember, like, before Rabin was assassinated, people were saying, like, you know, there's a time of quiet now. And then like, someone told me, like, every time it's too quiet, something happens.
It's true. Every time it's too quiet because it doesn't matter if too quiet, it's a matter of God's response to our behavior. When it's a time of quiet, it's an opportunity for you to realize God is protecting you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't realize that, and if you don't, you know, if you do the wrong things, which unfortunately, I don't have to tell you what's going on here, God's eventually going to say, look, I've got to remind you who I am.